I don't know if you've ever lived in a desert climate. For 3 years when I was a child, we lived in Arizona, in the very southern part, right out in the desert. And as an adult, I've gotten to travel to the Middle East, to desert places, fairly frequently across the years. And I've noticed something about those places. When you first arrive, they look very bare and very desolate, dry, as if nothing could possibly grow. But then you come to a stream and you find that there are trees and grass growing along the stream. Or if you come to a spring, you find that there are sometimes even flowers around the spring. And when it rains, there are flowers blooming everywhere that you didn't even realize were there. Now, in Arizona, it was the cacti that bloomed. They were gorgeous. In other desert areas, it's other flowers that bloom. But that is the image that Isaiah is giving us this morning of God's dream. That no matter how desolate the place in which we live, it describes the world as a desert. But God's presence is the stream in the desert, is the spring bubbling up out of the ground, is the rain falling so that the crocus bloom. I love it that it uses the crocus. Don't you just love it in the springtime when the crocus surprise you? You know, they've been lying dormant all this time, and then all of a sudden there's this beautiful, colorful blossom. That is God's dream for the world. And it's not just a dream that God holds. It is a dream that God takes part in, because it's God's presence that waters our desolate lives. And sometimes they do feel that way. It is God's presence that brings what we need to blossom. And to blossom is simply to become that person God has created us to be. To become that congregation God has created us to be. To become that community God has created us to be. Yesterday, I had a great privilege in being able to deliver the homily at a memorial service for a very dear friend and a former colleague of mine, Hoyt Hickman. Hoyt worked for many years at the General Board of Discipleship in the section on worship, and we worshiped the way we do today in large part because of Hoyt Hickman. He was born in Pittsburgh, grew up, served in Pennsylvania as a United Methodist pastor, became interested in worship at an early age. At the service yesterday, Beth Richardson read an account of his first remembrance of taking communion and how profoundly it affected him, and how that became a jumping off place for the rest of his life, literally. Hoyt was someone I met literally half my lifetime ago. In 1983, he and I were supervising students from Vanderbilt Divinity School. The student I was supervising was Dar Birkenpass, who went on to serve in South Dakota and retired a year and a half ago. Says something, doesn't it? But as supervisors, we had meetings together, and I learned about what he was doing. He learned about what I was doing. I got invited to take part in an event called Proclamation, a preaching event called Proclamation. And somehow Hoyt got it in his mind and became determined that I was the person to fill a particular empty slot on his team. Dick Esslinger was moving out of that slot as director of preaching ministries for the United Methodist Church. And Hoyt determined that this 33-year-old associate pastor who was serving in Columbia, Tennessee, who had never taken a preaching course — I went to seminary in the 70s when the curriculum was a little loose, okay? But that does explain a lot, doesn't it? And I also came through the ordination track when the requirements were a little loose, and I'm probably one of the reasons why they tightened them up. Just being honest. But he determined that this 33-year-old man who had never taken a preaching course should come on his team as director of preaching ministries for the United Methodist Church. Well, he started to work on the administration over there, convincing them of this impossibility. And he started working on me to convince me that I needed to leave the local church and go into what I considered a bureaucratic position. It was actually a program position. But he was successful on both accounts. And so, in the summer of 1984, I came to work at the General Board of Discipleship and worked with Hoyt for 6.5 years. He became one of the great teachers and great friends of my life. Hoyt's knowledge was encyclopedic of pretty much everything, but especially worship. He knew more than any other person I ever met about worship, including those who teach it at the seminary level, and they would tell you the same thing if they knew him. He developed the resources beginning in the 1970s that ultimately became the United Methodist Hymnal, that ultimately became our Book of Worship, The Faith We Sing. These books we use week in and week out for our worship were crafted in large part out of Hoyt Hickman's imagination and his deep and broad knowledge of the history of worship and how Christians had worshiped so differently across the centuries, but he found those commonalities, those things we shared, and brought those together for us. What I remember, though, is not so much just his vast knowledge, but that he carried it so gracefully. He never was arrogant. He never looked down upon those of us who needed his teaching, and I needed a lot of it. He shared it like a kid who is obsessed with dinosaurs, talking about dinosaurs. It was that almost childlike enthusiasm that he had for that topic that captivated you and drew you into it. Many folks passed through the section at that time, including our own David Bone, who was part of the service yesterday, and Sally Honor, who was in the service yesterday, who continue to work both inside the church and outside the church to help people rejoice in God's presence. And that, I think, is what was central to Hoyt's life. The word I would use for his life is doxology. Some people translate that right praise. I would say right tends to imply that there's only one way to do it, and Hoyt knew very well that that was not the case. You know, there are liturgical literalists and liturgical fundamentalists, just like there are theological fundamentalists and literalists, and Hoyt was neither. He was neither. He could see the value in the silence of Quaker worship, and he could see the value in the solemnity of High Mass and everything in between. But I would translate doxology appropriate rejoicing or appropriate praise. Appropriate to the presence of God and appropriate to the community in which we experience that presence. Which is why West End United Methodist and Edge Hill United Methodist, where this service was held, used the same hymnal and worship book, but the worship is vastly different. And the same would be true in the little church I grew up in, Antioch, out in the country in Montgomery County, using those same resources, but in very different ways. Hoyt understood that rejoicing was always in the context of where you were. Hoyt also understood the respiration of the church. And I've talked about this before. We come to worship so we can breathe in, and then we go out into the world so we can breathe out and live out that rejoicing in the world. And we come back so we can breathe in, and then we go back out into the world and we breathe out. That's why we are the body of Christ, breathing that love in and out and in and out and in and out. And his life exhibited that as well. He wasn't just interested in what took place within the confines of the sanctuary. He was interested in how that impacted all of life. Bill Barnes told a story yesterday at the service. Bill was pastor at Edge Hill for many, many, many years. And Bill told a story that comes from 1977 at the annual conference, the Tennessee Annual Conference. I remember this very well. Because on the floor of conference, a motion was made that the small amount of money that the conference had been giving to Edge Hill would be taken away because they had welcomed in their space the Metropolitan Community Church, which was one of the first churches to openly welcome LGBTQ folks. Remember, this was 1977. Well, that motion was tabled. And when Edge Hill formed a committee to try and interpret why they chose to welcome folks that others would not welcome, they appointed Hoyt Hickman as the chair. And throughout that year with his committee, Hoyt put together a document that was about this thick. He had researched the Christian background, the pre-Christian background. I told you his knowledge was encyclopedic. When he came with all of this evidence and documentation, the bishop didn't even bring the motion to the floor the following year. Hoyt knew that worship was more than simply what happens within the confines of a sanctuary. Rejoicing is more than simply gathering to sing praise. It is living that praise in the world. Second thing I learned from Hoyt was how to write. And in many ways, I learned something from him that I never learned from any English teacher. I never learned from any writing teacher. Because Hoyt could take highly sophisticated, very complicated concepts and express them in a way that absolutely anyone reading them could understand. It was remarkable. If you read some of his books about United Methodist worship, you can experience that for yourself. But he didn't dumb them down. Okay? In his simply expressing complicated matters, he was never simplistic. Instead of dumbing them down, I would call it, and this is not a perfect word, but it's the best I could find, wising them up. To wise up is a word from his generation. Come on, wise up. Get smart. Learn what you need to learn, right? When you read Hoyt, you never feel like he's putting you down, that you don't already know this. He never makes you feel dumb, ignorant. What he does is makes you want to learn so you can wise up. That's the way he shared that wisdom. That's what I would want to do in my writing, is to state it in such a way that absolutely anyone could read it and get it without feeling that they had been put down by it because they didn't know it already. Hoyt blossomed in his own unique way. He was that person God created him to be to the fullest. He was never a boss in the traditional sense of being a boss. He was more like a very bright, very eccentric, delightful uncle, okay? Who was always there to encourage you and support you and to teach you. He knew who God had created him to be, and he lived that out to the fullest for all of his years. I think that's what this text is talking about for each of us. We are here to blossom and to rejoice. Now, out in the world during this season, which everybody else calls Christmas, but we know is not Christmas because Christmas isn't here yet. This is Advent. We know in the church something that other people don't know. We're still waiting for that. But what we know is that this season is not a happy or easy season for a lot of people. While in the world, everybody's supposed to be happy. It's a kind of enforced happiness. But we know that there are folks sitting here and sitting in the offices and the schools where we work who have lost loved ones to death, who have experienced broken relationships this year, who have gotten diagnoses that they feared, who are in the midst of treatment that is painful and difficult. We know people who are not looking forward to those conversations around the dinner table because of political or religious differences within the family. What I believe we celebrate today is the fact that we can rejoice in God's presence even in the desert. Even when we're not in that happy place. Maybe especially when we're not in that happy place, because we need to be aware of God's presence even more fully. To rejoice is to say yes to God's presence, no matter what our circumstances. And that's when we begin to blossom. That's when we begin to discover who God has created us to be. And some of us discover it when we're 15, and some of us don't discover it till we're 90. But that's okay. Because a part of what we do in this community and a part of what we do in this season and a part of our rejoicing is to discover how each of us is about to break into blossom because the presence of God has watered the desert around us and allows us to break into that unique person that God created us to be, that unique community that God created us to be. And so we offer our doxology, our appropriate rejoicing for the presence of God in all occasions, this season and all seasons, in this place and all places. Is there better news? If there is, I don't know it. Thanks be to God.